Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Up here on the show, you know, we have people from startups or big organizations talking about, whatever cool new thing they built or new product they've launched. And those are always really interesting discussions. But today, I am very pleased that we have a project kind of a different sort. A project that warms my heart and the type of project that we often have at GeoMob events. And that's a project that someone just built for fun, that really shows off the power of digital geography. A very, very cool service that I encourage everyone to check out. So it is my good pleasure to welcome Robin Wilson here to the show. And he is the maker of a delightful little map tool called the British Place Name Mapper. Which, as the name implies, allows the user to explore British place names. Robin was a speaker at GeoMob London all the way back in 2015, so it's been a while. So, Robin, why don't we start by you introducing yourself and give us your background kind of in geo and what you do, and then we'll dive into your new product here.
Yeah, hi, thank you very much. Yes, so I'm Robin Wilson. Thank you for having me on the show. So now I'm a freelance geospatial software engineer and geospatial data scientist. So I work with a variety of companies ranging from tiny two-person companies up to massive multinationals, solving geo problems for them. My background is quite mixed. I did a PhD in satellite imaging. In fact, that time that I presented at the GeoMob event in London was in fact the night before my PhD Viva. I was using it as a distraction to stop myself worrying about my PhD Viva. I did a PhD in satellite imaging and worked in academia for a while, then had a few health problems, stopped work for a bit, and then went freelance. And I'm really enjoying it.
Well, first of all, congratulations on the PhD. I hope it all went well. And well done. Congrats. So let's get right into it. What exactly is the British Place Name Mapper?
Right, so the British Place Name Mapper is a fairly simple web app that allows you to search text that might appear in British place names and display the matching place names on a map. So you could do something like search for all the place names that start with great or end with ton or have C in the name or anything like that. You can do it with those sort of starting with, ending with, containing, but you can also use regular expressions, which a number of listeners will probably be aware of, a more technical way of searching text in programming languages, so you can do some more complex stuff as well. And then you can look at them on a map, you can hover over the dots on a map and find out what the names are, and start to see some of the fascinating patterns that emerge in British place names.
I can confirm it is an absolutely delightful way to lose about 30 minutes or so as you start playing with it and exploring. And so why did you build this? Was this client project, or this is just for a laugh, or?
No, I just did this for fun. So I had a little bit of time where I didn't have too many clients, so I had a bit of free time. And I'd in fact posted a blog post years ago. I had a look just now. I think it was in 2011, where I used the same sort of data set. In those days, it was called the Ordnance Survey Gazetteer, which is a name you don't hear very much these days, plot the locations of all the variations of place names known as Newtown. So there's Newton, a T-O-N at the end, Newtown, and then there's New Space Town, because you find lots of places in the UK have this name based on Newtown, because it was a new town at the time. And I plotted those on a map and found the different sort of variations clustered in different places and produced an interesting map. And that was all done years ago with a sort of standalone Python script. And I thought, well, you know, why don't I do this in a way that allows you to search for all sorts of things and do this interactively? And I kind of had the idea, I think, one kind of middle of 1 week, and sat down that weekend and built it.
And it's only towns and cities, or is it all kinds of place names, like forests, meadows, all kinds of everything, or what?
No, so it's only settlements. So it's everything down from sort of tiny little hamlets up to massive cities, but it's not names of features like forests or lakes or rivers or mountains or anything like that. It's just populated places.
For for those listeners, perhaps who are not in the UK or haven't lived in the UK, what are some of kind of the historic trends that people can kind of see in the data then?
Yeah, so the UK has been invaded by lots of different groups at lots of different times. And the UK is also composed of Great Britain, which is what this focuses on, which is the big island that is the majority of the UK, is composed of various different countries. You've got England, Wales and Scotland in Great Britain, and then you've also got Northern Ireland out on the island of Ireland. Northern Ireland isn't included in this data because it's not included in the Ordnance Survey data set. But you've got these different countries which have different backgrounds, different languages, different native languages, which bring in different words into place names. And then you've got invasions across sometimes multiple ones of these countries from various different groups. So the Normans came over from France, the Vikings came over from Scandinavia, people came from Denmark, people came from all sorts of different parts. You've got Celtic influences in Wales, in Cornwall. You've got Gaelic influences in Scotland. So you've got this huge melting pot of different cultures and different languages and different backgrounds that lead to quite a variety in the backgrounds of the names that are used for places.
Very nice, yes. So you mentioned that you're using the Ordnance Survey data. Take us under the hood a little bit. What kind of technologies and data sets are you using here?
Yeah, so this is actually remarkably simple. So Ordnance Survey provide this data set called OS Open Names that has names for all sorts of things, not just settlements, but it also has the kind of forests and mountains and so on. I excluded those for this. And I took that and wrote a simple Python script that went through the data, extracted the names, and put them into a very simple data structure that was just a list of lists. So each entry in the outside list just had a list of the name and then the latitude and longitude values for the location of that place. And then all the rest of it is done in JavaScript. So it's all done client-side. There's no server behind the scenes with a big database doing complicated, expensive SQL queries. What I did was basically put this list, output it to a string as JavaScript code for defining the list and have that in a JavaScript file called places.js or something. And then the rest of it is just using JavaScript functions that, for example, search through the list, apply a regular expression match to every entry in the list, checking the name, and then extract the list of latitudes and longitudes and plot them on a map. The map interface I'm using is using Leaflet, which is a web map library, and the rest of it is just some HTML and CSS and JavaScript for the kind of interactions to allow you to enter new searches and choose colors and all that kind of stuff.
Well, let's get into that a bit, because first maybe let's talk about the first of all, how many places are there? I mean, that's amazing that it can all happen client-side. That's so cool, because then it really is quite zippy and responsive. So how many places are we talking about? Tens of thousands? Or?
So, yeah, we've got tens of thousands. We've got, I think it's about 50,000 places, roughly. I mean, I wasn't convinced this was going to work client-side. But I thought, well, it's the simplest way of doing it. Let's try it, first of all. And the filtering is literally happening with the JavaScript filter function, which lets you take a list, apply a function to each entry in the list, and keep the ones where the function returns true. And the function is just a simple regular expression check. And I was amazed at how responsive it was. But I think that really shows that over the last decade or so, there's been a lot of work put into the speed of JavaScript. So a lot of JavaScript interpreters now will do just-in-time compilation and a load of low-level stuff that will allow you to get really good speed out of JavaScript. And it's probably quicker running those sort of filters in JavaScript than it would be in Python. And so you're easier to run it client-side than having to run a back-end server.
It's true. It's true that as someone who started life as a, you know, CGI Perl developer, and you know, every single request going back and forth to the server, the world has changed. So it's a very cool. So first, let's get into kind of what was the reaction when you published this. I think it was kind of early April that you put this out to the world.
Yeah, it was the Easter weekend, actually. So it was just at the end of just at the end of March, beginning of April. So I published it and I showed it to a few friends and they had a play and told me about a few bugs and I kind of fixed those and things. And then I tweeted it and not much happened over the Easter weekend, probably because people were very wisely not being on Twitter and going out and socialising and having fun. But I tweeted it again on the Tuesday morning when people were back at work. And obviously people wanted an excuse not to go through their emails and do their work. And it went a little bit viral. So I had hundreds of retweets and it went around quite a few sort of influential people on Twitter who retweeted it and shared it with their followers. I had quite a lot of interaction on Mastodon as well. And it kind of got around a bit. And then a few days later, probably by the end of that week, or maybe the beginning of the next week, someone posted it on Hacker News, which, for those of you who don't know, is a sort of geek-focused, tech-focused link aggregator site. And it got quite high up on Hacker News. It was on the front page for a day or two, and I think it got up to like number two or number three on the list with quite a lot of people accessing it and using it. So I was really chuffed.
Well, that, what was the primary feedback? People enjoyed it? People find bugs,
people
problems,
really liked it.
Interesting queries?
Yeah, so people found some really interesting stuff. They found some really interesting patterns. Most people were really positive. A number of people were saying, as you said earlier, that it was a great way to spend 30 minutes not doing work and finding fascinating patterns. A few people were cross about a few things, as people always are online and on Twitter and things. But the feedback was 99% really positive and people really enjoyed it.
Well done. But this gets to another interesting point, I think, in that, as you correctly say, the technology has improved a lot. It's so easy now to stick a map on a page and, we have all these great data sets that are available. So it's kind of building things has become less and less hard, right? But the question now is how do you, in quotes, market it? How do you get people to use it, share it, spread the word? And I think there are a couple pieces to that. I mean, one is like actually marketing it, so posting it in places where people see it, but also in sort of how you design the service, right, to make it easy to share and kind of encourage the user to pass it on to their friends and things like that. Talk about how you kind of think about that and any steps you took.
So I actually put quite a lot of thought into that because I was thinking, what can I do to make this really easy to use for people who aren't geospecialists? I mean, the first version required you to type in a regular expression. So it required you to know what a regular expression was. And if you wanted to search with things that ended with T-O-N, you had to type in T-O-N and then a dollar sign, because in regular expressions, the dollar sign means the end of the string or the end of the line. Obviously, that narrows its use to people who know what regular expressions is, which is a portion of the world population is relatively small. So I then extended it to have the drop downs of starts with, ends with, contains, that kind of stuff, which behind the scenes is just sticking in that dollar sign for you. It's nothing more complex than that. But it was also other things. So one of the things I was really proud of was the button that lets you copy a link to the settings that you've set up. So you can set it up where you've searched for five different things with five different colors and some of them starts with, some of them ends with, all this kind of stuff. And then if you click copy a link to this settings, it encodes all of that, those configurations in JSON, then Base64 encodes them and appends them to the URL. So you get an ugly looking URL that has a load of random looking characters at the end. But once you've got that, you can share that on Twitter or in a message to your friend or whatever. They can click that and see exactly what you're looking at. So it allowed people to share interactive maps of what they were looking at, what they'd found, the cool things they'd found. So that really helped it go a bit more viral on Twitter. And it kind of amazed me really how simple that is. You don't need a fancy server in the background to store everyone's maps and extract the right thing from the right ID. You can, again, do it all client-side, and it works really effectively.
Well, I mean, technically it is simple, but it is really quite hard to this new skill that's needed of how do I build tools and services that thrive, let's say, in the digital world and that encourage the user to share it and encourage, exactly as you said, get
you know, how do you really get the user to say, oh, I need to tell, you know, my three friends about this and this and make that step? And it's definitely, there's an art to it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's other stuff there as well, like the colors on the maps. Initially, I had you had to select a new color every time you chose something, so it would default to red. And every time you put a new one in, you'd have to change that to green or yellow or whatever. And then I built in a standard set of colors based on one of the color brewer color palettes. So if you haven't heard of Color Brewer, it's a great website where they have color schemes for maps, where you can look at sort of colors that get, you know, start at light blue and get to dark blue, or qualitative ones where they just have different colors in them. And I picked one of the qualitative ones and took out some of the nice colors that have been picked to work nicely together. So then again, when you create a map, it looks nice. It's not using pure red, pure green, and pure blue. It's something that actually looks nice together on the page, which again encourages people to want to screenshot it and share it, or share links, or whatever.
I'm glad you mentioned these little tweaks, because I really think you know, this is so important for, again, people in the most scarce resource right now is people's attention span, right? And those little details are what separate, you know, the tool you describe. I mean, I'm not downplaying your technical skills, but really, as you say, it's quite simple, right? We have a list of names, longitude and latitude. We put it on a map. I mean, you know, I would guess the absolute vast majority of GeoMob attendees could build that. You know, but the question is, how do you make this a service that then people really want to engage with, and that instead of just having a quick look and saying like, oh, okay, actually spend the 30 minutes working on it. So well done. Bravo.
It's about building it so that people will use it. And it's also, I would say, the other ancillary skills around building it. So it's not just, you know, can you write a bit of JavaScript code that does this? It's, can you build the whole thing? Can you get, do you know where to get the data from? Mm. Do you have the skills to write the Python that processed the data in the first place to get it into a form that the JavaScript stuff could deal with? Do you have a website you can put it on? Do you know how to upload it to whatever website you're going to put it on? Do you have enough Twitter followers that when you tweet something, it might actually get a bit of traction? You know, there's a whole collection of things around that that's not just, can I write 100 lines of JavaScript or whatever it is.
It's funny, Rami, if you don't mind, let's take a brief diversion, because you keep mentioning Twitter, and I've completely abandoned Twitter in the last year. And also with GeoMob, you know, we've moved fully to Mastodon. What's your take on that? Because you find Twitter still working well for you? Or?
So it's interesting. I hadn't really done anything on Twitter for months. You know, because of the whole, you know, Elon Musk Twitter thing, I'd kind of given up on it mostly. No. I read Twitter reasonably often, but I didn't post much. But then when I came up with this thing, I thought, well, I'll post it on Twitter and see what happens. And the engagement I got on Twitter was actually orders of magnitude more than I got on any other social media platform, apart from possibly Hacker News. Okay. But even then, it was significantly more than Hacker News. And I was really surprised by that, because I thought all the people who would have liked this stuff had probably left Twitter. But actually, I still got a load of interaction. And I got a load of interaction from a load more kind of, in inverted commas, normal people, right, who weren't geo nerds. You know, I had an MP retweeting it. I had, you know, a load of people interested in family history and genealogy getting involved because they were interested in you know, place names for people's births and deaths and so on. And I was kind of surprised by that, because I'd kind of given up on Twitter, but actually it led to some really interesting discussions, and I'm really glad I posted it there. And I'd still got enough of my followers from kind of the days when I did use Twitter more, that it still got kind of out there a bit.
That's interesting, because I mean, I'd fully moved to Mastodon, I guess partially because I guess we're trying to reach toward the GNG audience. But, and one of the main reasons, I mean, besides like all the ideological stuff, was just I found Twitter just not working anymore. Like when for my company, OpenCage, you know, our tweets just wouldn't resonate, and then I would put the exact same content on Mastodon and it would explode, you know. So
yeah, I mean, that's really, really weird. I mean, I don't understand why this worked on Twitter. I think it probably got to I think their algorithm is very weird these days, but it probably got to the right key people in that kind of network and then managed to penetrate through the algorithm and get recommended to people. But it's interesting. I actually had, in some ways, I had better technical sort of interesting responses on Twitter than I did on Mastodon. Mastodon, a number of people were complaining about things, whereas on Twitter I got a lot of people saying, this is awesome, and this is something I found, and this is something else I found. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's weird.
What were some of the things people found? Give us, what was your most, top two or three revelations about British place names? Any shockers?
Yeah, so... So the first one was a fascinating thing that quite a lot of people came up with, which is if you search for certain word endings in names like Thwaite, Thwaite, and by, sometimes it's pronounced like Whitby or somewhere, then you find a pretty good outline on the map of what's known as the Danelaw area, which is the area that right back in sort of Anglo-Saxon times was controlled by people from Denmark and controlled, I think, by the Danish king and so on. And actually, if you there's a couple of maps of this I've got on my blog post that will be linked in the show notes, where I covered a number of the interesting maps that have been created. And if you put the two maps side by side, the map from the place name mapper with these places and the map from Wikipedia showing the Danelaw area, they match pretty exactly, which is quite cool. So really some interesting history stuff there. So that was one of them. Another one I just loved was someone using regular expressions, more complicated regular expressions, to look for places that were palindromes. So that's words that read the same forward and backwards. And there aren't that many of them, but there's a few places in the UK, and they were using match groups and things in regular expressions to be able to search for that, which I hadn't thought of. And then the other one is just searching for interesting words or interesting parts of words and finding just how many place names have those in them. And this can apply to all sorts of things. You can search for your name and find that there's loads of places that have got your name in them, depending what your name is, obviously. But also there's places like, there's about, about 10 places in the UK called California. I've no idea why, but there's about 10 places called California. There's about 20 places called Little London.
Well, Robin, looking into that. As someone who works on a geocoder, I can tell you right now, this practice should be banned immediately. We should, every place needs to have one clear, unique, identifiable name. it's so annoying, the California restaurant, inevitably somehow through mistakes of OpenStreetMap tagging or whatever, they get bumped to the top. It drives me nuts.
Yeah, but I was just amazed at how many of those were. As I said, the other one, Little London, there are loads of places in the UK called Little London, and most of them are nothing like London in the slightest. They're tiny little hamlets in the middle of nowhere. And I did a bit of research into this, and it turns out some of them are named that because they were where people came from London in the Black Death back in the 15th century, when they evacuated London to try and not get ill. And they went to somewhere in rural Lincolnshire or rural Worcestershire or wherever. And the place was known as Little London because the people from London had come there, which is a fascinating bit of history from, 500 years ago that's still reflected in the place names now.
There's so many things like that. I mean, this is one of the things I miss about living in London. I used to live on this street right outside of the city of London called Bun Hill Row. And Bun Hill was a corruption of Bone Hill, because during the plague, they piled up all the dead bodies there and then buried them.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. It's fascinating history. It really is. I actually got quite a few responses, partly from family history groups, but also from teachers teaching history in schools and colleges and universities, saying they want to use this with their students when they're talking about the Roman invasion or the Viking invasion or whatever, and mapping that, looking at place name endings and getting their students to try and work out where these people went and how this impacted the UK.
How cool is that? Well done. Well done. So, I mean, would you say the service is done now, or have people given you suggestions for kind of improvements and new features and things like that?
So, there are more things I could do to it. I'm wary of making it too much more complicated because part of its part of its charm is its simplicity, that there's not too much to understand. You can just jump in and get going with it. I mean, one thing that a number of people have asked about is bringing in names of other things. So, as I mentioned earlier, the names of rivers and lakes and mountains and forests and that kind of stuff. So I could do that, but then that's going to make the map a lot more cluttered. You're going to get a lot more points on it. You know, it can be difficult to read sometimes anyway when you get a big density of points. So I'm kind of in two minds about that. The other thing that loads of people have asked about is doing other countries. People have talked about Ireland. People have asked about the US. Someone has actually taken my code with my permission and put in the place names through Lithuania and a load of the same thing for Lithuania, and people are using that. So I might do some of those things. I did a trial of the US on my local machine, and it was a lot slower because, of course, you've got a lot more places in the US. And so the idea of doing it all client side is starting to get a bit trickier. And then, of course, if I have to rebuild something entirely that's got a server back end and everything, I'm not sure whether I can be bothered to do that, really.
I have seen a similar tool for Germany a couple of years ago, but it wasn't as slick, nearly as easy to use, and I don't think it was client side. I don't remember the exact details of it, but it's just so fun to explore on these types of things. So anyway, very well done. I applaud everything about it. Building the service, promoting the service, getting people using it. I mean, that's wonderful. Because this is, the type of service that really gets people interested in geography, right? Exactly as you say, the normal people who just, can see all of a sudden make connections and the history. It's very impressive.
Exactly. This is the kind of thing that would have fascinated me well before I got into GIS or geography, or sort of geodata in any way. Back when I was at school or a teenager or whatever, I would have been fascinated by this and sat around playing with it. And I hope that it's inspired some other people maybe of that age as well to go, oh, you can do interesting stuff with geodata. Maybe I should look into that and maybe get into the field.
Absolutely. And I think maybe that's a good segue, Robin, because you mentioned one of the key things you needed for the project was the data and needing to know where you can get the data. And so I wanted to make sure that you have a chance to plug another service that, if I may say, you're kind of well known for in the geo world, which is your free GIS data page or site, or I don't know how you refer to it. But so you have for many years now run a directory of free GIS data. Okay, tell us a little bit about that product and how people can find it and use it.
Yeah. So this is my free GIS data site. It's freegisdata.rtwilson.com. And it's basically just one big page where there's loads of links to free data categorized. So you can look under population or weather and climate or land use or whatever's relevant. And then there's categories for individual countries as well. And it's all just one big page. It's really simple. There's no complicated search. If you want to search in it, you use Control F in your web browser. You're really as simple as you can get. But it seems to be really useful for people. As you said, I'm kind of known for it. It gets quite a lot of hits every day. And I built it really years ago when I was doing my PhD and I was looking for interesting bits of geodata to use as part of my PhD research. And I put it together and I asked for suggestions for links to include. And then I've kind of just kept it ticking along ever since then. In fact, I did a couple of weeks ago, I had a day free, an evening free, while I was babysitting a friend's daughter, and I sat there while she was sleeping and went through all of the links, checking whether they worked and whether they went to the right place anymore. Which, of course, after having had it online for quite a few years, they didn't necessarily. But yeah, it's up there. There's more than 500 links, and people seem to find it useful, which is great.
Well done, bravo! I mean, that is. Yeah, very. I mean, it's true. It is a simple thing, but as you say, it still takes some effort to maintain that, to validate it, make sure the links are still live. I'm sure you must get weird questions from people, so I'm sure there is a maintenance burden. So.
Yeah, there is, and there's a very clear message at the bottom of the page saying, "Please don't email me asking for data because everything I know about is on this page." And I still get multiple emails regularly from people going, "I want data for this. I want data for that. Give me data for this."
Well, One of the first things I've learned is people don't read anything. So,
well, exactly, yeah. Exactly. But it, no, I'm really chuffed with it, and I really like the fact. Again, I think probably the link between both of these projects we've discussed is the simplicity. It's not making it over complex. I'm really not a fan of the big data hubs where you have to drag out an area on the map to say, I want to search for data in this location and all of this kind of stuff. The 3GIS data list is as simple as it comes. It's a throwback to the web from the mid-90s where you had just a page with a load of links on it, and that is all it is. But it makes it really simple to use, and really simple to maintain, really simple to run and cheap to run, and it's still really effective.
I agree entirely. The simplicity is what wins, so congrats to you. On that note, Robin, any closing advice for anyone out there, maybe at the start of their GIS career or just contemplating building any type of online web geo-focused tool or service? It seems you have the skill, so what's the closing advice for them?
Yeah, so again, I think I'd go with the simplicity. Build something simple. You build the minimum viable product, first of all. My minimum simple product was required you to type in regular expressions. Then I decided that was a bit too complex, so I made it simpler and so on. So keep it simple. If you're getting started in geo and GIS and things, learn to code. Probably Python is the best way to get going in that if you aren't experienced before. But doing stuff online with JavaScript is great as well. It really opens a huge number of doors to you and number of possibilities when you can start coding stuff yourself rather than clicking around in QGIS or ArcGIS or whatever. When you've got an idea, just take it, run with it, see what happens. There's all sorts of tutorials online to help you with web maps. There's AI things. ChatGPT helped me with a bit of the CSS for the website because my CSS skills are not great, it must be said. And go for it. Have the confidence to try it.
Here, here. Well done. Well said. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show. What if people want to get in touch with you, ask you about these projects, maybe ask you for some exclusive new GIS data sets that you've been holding back from the page? What's the best way for them to reach out and get in touch with?
Yeah. So there should be links to my various websites in the show notes. So there'll be links to the place name mapper, including also my blog post reviewing some of the cool maps and linking some of the cool maps. There's a link there to my freelance website, rtwilson.com. I do have some availability at the moment to do freelance work for people on geo stuff. So please contact me if you're interested in that. I'd love to have a conversation with you. There's a link to my blog as well. I'm trying to blog more regularly now. I've got posts scheduled for the next few weeks on a variety of geo things, tech things, Python things, nerd things, all sorts of stuff like that. And if you want to contact me, my email's on my website. There are links to Twitter and Mastodon in the show notes. So send me a message, send me a tweet, send me an email, anything like that. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, I definitely encourage people to play with the British Place Name Mapper, to check out your blog, and to give you a follow on Mastodon or Twitter or whatever, because you're always doing very interesting stuff. So thank you very much, Robin. Hopefully, maybe we'll get you back to a GeoMob London at some point as well.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
So, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting me. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us today and listening to the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Please get in touch with us if you have any feedback or suggestions for topics we should cover. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly mailing list where we keep you informed about upcoming events. You can also follow us on Twitter, where our handle is GeoMob. Thanks again for listening, and hope to see you at a GeoMob event soon.